This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. See if you try.
Halloween, all you heathens and heretics. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. And speaking of Halloween, my co-host informs me that it's a Celt tradition, that the Celts always marked the sad end of summer with festivities on October 31st. And the Catholic Church enveloped the fall ritual as they did most pagan and seasonal customs. And so I think it's great to mark the changing seasons with a little fun today, and to mark the end of the beautiful fall colors as we are doing here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Can you play that again, Dan? That little scary, my piano playing that I made? Scary. We call this ominous piano. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. And we hope someday you will join us. Free Thought Radio is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is a national organization of freethinkers. And that word freethinker is one word, not free space thinker, but freethinkers. We are atheists and agnostics and other types of heretics and heathens who work to keep religion and government separate, keep religion out of government, which we will talk about later on today's show, and to educate the public about the views of those of us who opt out of religion.
On the second half of Free Thought Radio, we'll speak with an expert on tax law, and that might sound a little far afield, but our retired IRS agent is going to help all of us understand the current IRS perks, privileges, and preferential treatment of clergy persons. Robert Beatty will be our guest, and this is in conjunction with the launch a week ago of a very significant new federal lawsuit filed by the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Sacramento with 21 of our cooperating California members, and it's called Freedom From Religion Foundation versus Geithner.
And
I kind of like the sound of that, and that is, of course, Obama's Treasury Secretary, and we're also suing the IRS and the California Tax Franchise Board. And we're suing to correct a longstanding violation dating to the 1950s known as the Parsonage Exemption, which applies only to ministers of the gospel, whereby the IRS permits clergy to deduct their mortgage, interest, and property tax payments and housing allowances and so on.
And if that isn't scary enough this Halloween, or rather hateful enough, the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Keep Religion Out of Government billboard on the 2600 block of North Avenue in Grand Junction, Colorado, was defaced. Apparently, last weekend, a vandal crossed out the word, X'd out the word religion and painted in the word fags. Let's listen to some local coverage.
I hate to say it, but what does that? It takes our sign that we're paying good money for it to honor the separation of church and state, and it says keep bags out of government. So it's a double hate crime.
This is WREX-TV.
Less than a month after being put up, a Keep Religion Out of Government billboard on North Avenue and Grand Junction has been defaced with a hateful message. Now, sometime over the weekend, the word religion was crossed out with black spray paint, as you can see, and replaced with a homophobic slur. The national organization called Freedom From Religion Foundation has put up more than 50 of these billboards across the country, and they say this is the first one ever to be defaced. The billboard can be seen by drivers headed westbound on North Avenue between 29 and a half and 20 roads. The foundation, which is based in Wisconsin, is talking with the billboard sign, with the billboard company, that is, to get that sign replaced as soon as possible.
So this is the first time one of our billboards has ever been defaced, and we have placed over 50 billboards. That's the first time with this particular message. in about 22 states so far since late 2007, and it's very nasty, and it's targeting both us and gays, and we do regard it as hate, a hate crime, and we're working with local members in Grand Junction, Colorado, to get religion out of government in some particular violations, and so we see this as kind of an effect of having religion and state united in Grand Junction, because somebody's gotten the message that those people who believe in a God have more rights than those of us who don't. So when religion is allied with government, there is always this kind of thing, persecution of minorities and the unorthodox.
And those people who want to censor free speech are basically proving our point, aren't they? That when you mix religion and government, what do we have? We have hateful actions and hateful words by people. The Freedom From Religion Foundation, we not only did we file a police report about this hate crime, but we are offering $1,000 for information relating to the arrest and conviction of the perpetrator or perpetrators of this hate crime.
So call the foundation if you have information. And we'll have some other scary news to report from the past week and all of this news showing why the message on our billboard is so important, why we must keep religion out of government. Congress continues to entertain amendments in the various major health care reform bills, which would mandate that insurers reimburse Christian Science practitioners or others for prayer. When they use prayer instead of medicine, they would have to be reimbursed. And for example, there was a case where the parents of a little boy, a Christian Science boy, died of untreated diabetes in Minnesota, and the parents were charged more than $400 for this so-called treatment. This is what would be required. Our own Wisconsin Representative Tammy Baldwin seems to be interested in fighting this, but other than that, there's been hardly a whimper out of Congress over this. So if you have not contacted your members of Congress yet to ask them to vote against these unconstitutional mandates to cover prayer as medicine, please do so.
And another scary development, a state in Indonesia this month is mandating death by stoning for adulterers. The New York Times a few days ago quoted a Democratic Party leader, Yus Rizal Ibrahim, saying, "Stoning is part of Sharia, and by voting no, it would have made it look as though we were against Islam."
And we'd rather kill people than be against Islam, of course. Dogma over humanity wins out every time.
Also scary for those of us who treasure the principle of keeping religion out of government. Here's some other news. Next week, voters in Maine will be asked to repeal Maine's new law permitting same-sex marriage. Guess who's the primary opponent of this law out there lobbying the public? Yes, this time it's not the Mormon Church. It's deferred to the larger and more powerful Roman Catholic Church. And all the news is reported that the opposition is being led by the Roman Catholic Church. So don't take our word for it.
And the Roman Catholic Diocese of Portland, Maine, has given $529,000, well, actually $529,666 to the Stand for Marriage Maine. And that represents, well, they've collectively, with the New Jersey-based National Organization for Marriage, these two groups collectively represent 83% of the donations to the groups fighting gay marriage on the ballot. And the Roman Catholic Diocese of Portland accounts for 81% of the in-state fundraising.
That in-state fundraising against gay marriage.
So that's why we need to keep religion out of government.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Coming up, a look at October Free Thought Celebrities, and then we'll talk with a tax expert about all the perks and benefits which you, the taxpayer, are providing to the clergy. Why our foundation has taken on this golden calf, the parish exemptions in the United States tax code.
My name's John Ribble. I'm from Jerseyville, Illinois, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
There is a new radio show just for you, Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Lorgaler with Dan Barker. That's a snippet of Dan's piano from his song Lucifer's Lament. And we thought Armored Christian Soldiers is about as scary a thought as any.
And those of you who are musicians might know that that song was played in the Locrian mode, which was called the Devil's Mode, a totally useless kind of unsettling mode of music, which I think is perfect for that kind of religious music. I'm Dan Barker, and today's show is broadcasting this weekend on Halloween in most cities. A few of you are listening on the day after. Did you know that John Keats was born on October 31st in 1795? He lived only 25 years. He was felled prematurely by pneumonia. He's the subject of a new film by Jane Campion, which is called Bright Star. And we saw that film just a couple of weeks ago. A nice film. And they recited some of his poems, but not his famed poem called Sonnet Written in Disgust of Vulgar Superstition.
Yeah, don't you love that title?
And Dan Ginsberg, I'm Dan Barker, but Dan Ginsberg is our engineer. Do you have some, like, ominous church bells or something we can play? All right, Sonnet Written in Disgust of Vulgar Superstition. The church bells toll a melancholy round, calling the people to some other prayers, some other gloominess, more dreadful cares, more hearkening to the sermon's horrid sound. Surely the mind of man is closely bound in some black spell, seeing that each one tears himself from fireside joys and Lydian airs, and converse high of these with glory crowned. Still, still they toll, and I should feel a damp, a chill from a tomb, did I not know that they are dying like an outburnt lamp, that 'tis their sighing, wailing ere they go into oblivion, that fresh flowers will grow and many glories of immortal stamp.
And that was John Keats' sonnet written in disgust of vulgar superstition, and he was an immortal. And born on Halloween 1795 in London, the son of a livery stable manager. His first book was published when he was only 21 to acclaim. His second book of poetry came out in 1920 to more
1820.
Acclaim. 1820. But by then, Keats had been nursing his dying brother. His mother had died of TB. He was ill himself from TB. Depressed over his thwarted romance with Fanny Brawn, which was the subject of the new film Bright Star. And he penned for his epitaph, "Here lies one whose name was writ in water." Keats was a critic of religion who eschewed religious ritual before his death and expressed his views in his many letters against the pious friends of religion. He died in 1821.
Other Halloween birthdays, non-religious actress Elsa Lancaster was born October 28, 1902. Well known as a character actress, but best known for portraying the Bride of Frankenstein in a 1930s movie.
And not a birth date, but a death date is marked in October. Michael Servetus, the physician who renounced the Trinity, he was Spanish, was put to death on October 27th, 1553, by his once friend turned persecutor, Calvin. And Dan, you've read a couple of books on that. How was he executed?
Servetus was a Protestant co-reformer with Calvin, but he insulted Calvin by telling him that his views were wrong. Calvin tied him to a stake, tied his neck to the stake, and put some green wood and had him slowly burned to death with some of his books tied to his legs.
And Servetus just was a nice person who didn't really believe that his friend, he was passing through Geneva, didn't really believe his friend, former friend, could be so barbaric.
Yeah, it was a legal murder is what it
was. And so it's a terrible story. But there are many other birth dates of famous freethinkers born in the month of October, and they're nice to think about. Gore Vidal, Denise Diderot, Giuseppe Verdi, John Lennon, Harold Pinter, and one of the Freethought community's favorite comedians and thinkers, Julia Sweeney, was born in October.
Also Eleanor Roosevelt, E.E. Cummings, Katha Pollitt, Nietzsche, P.G. Woodhouse, John Kenneth Galbraith, Eugene O'Neill, John Dewey, Coleridge, Ursula K. Le Guin, who will be speaking next week at our national convention, by the way, Doris Lessing, and George Bizet.
And as always, documentation, and there's more details on these great writers and artists and freethinkers and trailblazers available from the Freedom From Religion Foundation's website. We have something called Free Thought of the Day. We have their bios up and documentation and quotes. And you can check that out under the news link. And we're adding new people every day, so it's worth checking out. And now I think we have a little bit of time to talk just a little bit more about what happened to Servetus. Dan, they were Calvin and Servetus were friends in Paris.
Well, they were
right?
They were co-reformers. They were opposed to the brutality of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church was putting heretics and blasphemers to death. And Calvin and Luther, although they're hypocritical, they said you shouldn't put people to death for opinion. Well, that's exactly what Calvin did.
Well, how long did this take to their friendship take to disintegrate?
Well,
it's over the years.
Calvin betrayed Servetus earlier by revealing him to the French Catholic Inquisition. He was arrested and he was going to be put to death by the Inquisition. He escaped. Then he went to Geneva to confront Calvin. Geneva had no law against blasphemy or heresy or no death penalty. And so he didn't think there would be any problem if he would just go talk to Calvin. And Calvin had him arrested. And over a few months, there's this trial where Servetus basically was, his heresy was that he said Jesus was the Son of the Eternal God instead of Jesus was the Eternal Son of God. That little tiny misplaced adjective is what got him killed.
I'm Annie Largaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. Coming up, Robert Beatty, who will tell us how the tax code punishes you for not being a clergy person, and why FFRF's new lawsuit taking on the IRS and the Treasury Department over the parish exemptions is a very significant challenge. And you can look up more information, you can read the complaint at legal, at our news release at FFRF.org. So it's very interesting. Stay tuned.
This is Richard Dawkins, author of The God Delusion. You're listening to Free Thought Radio.
Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and our guest today is Robert Beatty.
And this is the Halloween weekend, and I can't think of a more scary guest to have on a show than an IRS auditor. Robert Beatty was an auditor, served as an office auditor in the IRS in 1973. He was promoted to reviewer in 1982, then promoted to appeals officer in 1984. He worked on some big cases, making the news over the years. And we understand, Robert Beatty, that you live just down the street from the famous Balloon Boy in Fort Collins, Colorado. Did you see that balloon go off?
No, I wasn't around watching the skies when it took off, but got in on the story after the fact and after doing a little check and realized he was only about a mile up the bike trail.
And the other news, of course, was the filing of our lawsuit as well. But I just wanted to tell you something. You were an auditor. That deduction that I took for bird seed, that really was legitimate. So tell them not to worry about that.
We'll have to check in on that.
Oh, no.
Well, now we have Robert Beatty on the phone with us to talk about parish exemptions and what that is. And what exactly are those parish exemptions? You know, where is that in the tax code? And what does it mean?
Well, fundamentally, it comes from Section 107, and it's an exclusion from income. And under 107, there's two parts to it. The first part, which has been around much longer, is simply a provision that allows for a minister to exclude from income the value of housing that's provided by a church. The newer provision, which I think came about in the 1950s, added the exclusion for actual cash payments that are designated as housing to the extent the minister actually uses that amount for housing costs, whether he rents or buys a home. And there's some technical aspects to it as far as limitations and how it's computed in particular circumstances.
So, go ahead.
It's a fairly simple provision. The complexities come in the administration of it.
Ah. Now, under the federal law, these allowances are paid to ministers of the gospel. and they're not treated like other taxable income, like the for those of the rest of us. Isn't that right?
Right. It's a provision specifically designed for the benefit of those that qualify under the definition of minister of the gospel, which itself is subject to some controversy depending on the circumstances and the differences between religious groups.
Is a rabbi considered a minister of the gospel?
Yes. Jewish case law and provisions indicate that rabbis as well as cantors qualify for
treatment. Wow. Just for singing in church or temple?
Well, I wouldn't minimize what they do. I'm not that familiar with all the details, but there was some controversy in the past, and cantors eventually became qualified as well as the rabbis.
They perform weddings, I know that. So,
and this would be that basically the law has been interpreted that any ordained clergy from a religion gets this kind of deduction. Isn't that right?
Right. The administration inside is where you run into the problems is who qualifies as commissioned, licensed, or ordained. And as your lawsuit points out, also in figuring out how broad the organization should be recognized that employs people. You know, is it just the local church? Is it the corner grocery store? Is certain private schools? The government has gotten caught up in trying to determine which organizations run by nice folks are should be treated as if they were the church, so that ministers employed there could also claim this benefit.
Now, before we go on, I should point out that all taxpayers except clergy are denied this, with the exception of some federal employees, you know, military personnel, for example, have benefits, but they're federal employees, and this is the only private sector group, the clergy, who are given any of these deductions. Isn't that right?
Well, there's other provisions of the law that provide tax-free income for housing, but, of course, they would not run afoul of the Establishment Clause, where you provide a benefit strictly for ministers of the gospel, then you run into questions which the scholars and tax experts over the years have discussed at some length as to why that's problematic. And it is unique under Section 107 for ministers, which raises the Establishment Clause issue, which, as far as I know, has never gotten a straight-up test as to whether it passes the Establishment Clause test or not.
Well, here we go. That's our lawsuit. So, however you count it, there are hundreds of thousands of people in this privileged class above the rest of us mere homeowners and taxpayers who are deducting thousands of dollars every year from their income and paying much less of a tax liability, and we, the rest of us, have to make up for that. And these people are doing the job of religious ministry.
So,
right.
Robert, when did you first become aware of this inequity? I mean, when did you start to feel this was wrong?
I first became aware of it 25 or so years ago when I was working with the IRS, and it involved a case where a basketball minister at a private school was claiming the exclusion on the theory that the private school was operated as an agency of the church. He was a minister, and therefore he was entitled to the exclusion. In the course of that research and watching that case go through the system, I became aware that there was quite a controversy in the legal and tax community about the legitimacy of the housing exclusion itself, without regard to how broad it might be administered. And it's been a fascination to me that it has not got a straight-up test in all these years that I know of. So I was glad to see the suit filed, and whether or not the code section is sustained or overturned, hopefully there'll be a broad-based public discussion of its merits, and if nothing else, many of the abuses can be considered and possibly something done to correct for them.
Now, before we talk about that, Robert, you've left us hanging. What happened with the basketball minister?
Well, in his case, while it went through the administrative process over and over again, the local people thought it was a good issue and sustained the decisions to disallow it. It was set for trial in the tax court a number of times, but ultimately the government was forced to concede the case because of an outstanding administrative ruling that the IRS had issued earlier that was brought about by the political pressure of George Bush Sr. and Omar Burleson, a couple of Texas politicians that had been called in to help private school in Texas deal with that issue. And despite the fact that previous administrative rulings had said they do not qualify, over a course of almost 20 years, after, in the late 1960s, Nixon came to power and Bush and Burleson were called in to help these private school people, they compelled the IRS to issue this ruling that said these private schools, like Pepperdine, were operated as agencies of the church. So people at those schools could sign up as ministers.
Wow.
And claim the exclusion.
So that's what's going on today.
And that's been going on for almost 40 years now.
So a gym teacher or a math teacher at a religious school can claim that exemption then?
Correct. And they do. You know, over 40 years, it's been exploited more and more.
Well, who wouldn't?
It seems awfully greedy to me.
Well, it reflects the expansive nature of what might have started out innocently enough, but has grown. And
kind of out of control.
Instead of just having a local church that's got a house that they put the minister up in, now you have mega churches and all sorts of religious connected businesses going on, and everybody certainly would like some tax-free income. And in this case, because of this administrative ruling that Bush and Burleson helped compel the IRS to issue, even though they recognized that it was contrary to the facts and the law, you have more and more people signing up as ministers so they can claim the exemption, even though they may coach basketball or teach math or maybe run some retirement home somebody's got going. I'm not fully informed of just how bad it is, but there's enough in the public record that you can see where it's going.
Now, Mr. Beatty, we're going to have to break, but okay. We want to come right back, and we want our listeners to know that there's a fascinating development, a case from the early 2000s with Reverend Rick Warren that really brought this thing to a head, and the kind of greedy deductions that he was taking and what Congress did to protect him. So we're going to talk about that. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio with a tax expert, a retired IRS auditor and appeals officer for Free Thought Radio, and we'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Justin. I'm representing the Hoosier State, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're talking with retired IRS employee Robert Beatty about the Freedom From Religion Foundation's new lawsuit challenging parish exemption from income for the clergy.
And that was filed a couple weeks ago in federal court in Sacramento with the help of Madison attorney Rich Bolton, our local counsel, the famous Michael Newdow, 21 California members. And we're suing Geithner and the IRS, and we're suing the California Franchise Board also. So we wanted to do something about this, and we are talking with Robert Beatty, who is a retired former IRS auditor and appeals officer, and he knows a lot about this law. And Robert, we wanted to talk about the case that really brought this to everybody's attention, which concerned Reverend Rick Warren. Can you briefly talk about that?
Yes, I think the Rick Warren case, the issue in his case that was disputed was might be considered a minor technical issue as to how the allowance should be computed. He was basically claiming $80,000 a year as tax-exempt housing.
And this is in the mid-90s, right, or early 90s?
Yeah, late 90s. I think the litigation was in the early 2000s. But he was claiming $80,000 a year in tax-exempt housing. And the value of his house was a little less than that. So the IRS questioned, he couldn't exclude the full $80,000. It was something less, which is somewhat of a diversion for purposes of this discussion, which should be brief. But in the course of that litigation, the court questioned on its own whether the fundamental law that he should get anything was constitutional.
Any kind of deduction. This is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, right?
Right. Ninth Circuit Court out in California, what they call the most liberal court, raised that question and asked Professor Chemerinsky to brief them on whether the law itself was constitutional, because maybe he shouldn't have any deduction, any exclusion.
And this is Erwin Chemerinsky, who's a leading First Amendment attorney.
Right. He's a constitutional scholar and is now at the new law school dean at the University of California in Irvine.
And the minister is the guy who prayed at Obama's inauguration, Rick Warren.
Right. Fascinating connection of circumstances that make it a notorious case for consideration.
And what does Professor Chemerinsky want to do?
Well, Professor Chemerinsky quickly concluded that the law is unconstitutional. He was ready to argue that before the court. The Rick Warren and his people realized that and started the motions of their political machine, and in an amazing feat got Congress to rewrite the law in such a way that Chemerinsky would be cut off and the court would not be allowed to consider that issue.
And that rewrite was simply to say that they could not deduct more than the fair market value. Isn't that right?
Right. The revision in the law said the IRS was right, but you're not going to apply it to the years that Rick Warren's case involved. It would only be done for future years.
So he got everything he wanted.
He got everything he wanted. He in effect, you could say he lost the issue, because for future years he would be limited. But he won in that he kept the court from considering the constitutional issue.
And that's what we want to do now. That's why we took our lawsuit, so that we could go back before the Ninth Circuit and finally make this argument.
Right. The Ninth Circuit told Chemerinsky he could start over and begin his own lawsuit. Chemerinsky got distracted, and running a law school can be that way.
Too bad.
And so I've been anxious as to who's going to take it up. And I'm glad to see that the FFRF has taken up where Chemerinsky has left off, got the suit filed.
Didn't Rick Warren write that book, The Loophole-Driven Life?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of Rick Warren's. I know he's been everywhere and all over and has gotten into politics quite a bit. And perhaps he's an ideal person or personality to be concentrated on as this lawsuit goes forward, as to how he fits into the public discussion as to why there's a problem. I noticed just this morning in doing some checking, there was a case down in Florida, some obscure church was having to fuss with the local people because they built a $3 million parsonage And the preacher, of course, was getting the value of that tax-free.
Wow.
And, you know, there's a question about locally down there as to whether they should tax that or not.
Well, we'll have to take that up on another radio show. We're out of time, but we are so appreciative of your expertise, Robert Beatty, Fort Collins, Colorado, for joining us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you can look up our lawsuit online under news releases at ffrf.org.
We also want to thank our engineer, Dan, the other Dan, Dan Ginsburg. Free Thought Radio is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. Our announcer is Buzz Kemper from Audio for the Arts. All of our past shows are archived and available for podcasting at ffrf.org/radio.
And we invite you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, not only to keep us on the air, but to keep our litigation going. Nobody else is taking this kind of litigation. You can call for more information at 1-800-335-4021 or ask for information at ffrf.org. We'll send plenty of free material, the November issue of Free Thought Today. And tune in next week for more blasphemous broadcasting and rational radio.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.